This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. It's too early to estimate the impact of the Cambridge Analytica scandal on Facebook or on the rest of the tech platforms now mining and selling every nanosecond of our lives. But one can't help but feel that whether through legislation, regulation, or customer revolt, something's got to give.
It may seem as if it were ever thus, but it wasn't. In fact, back in October of 2012, I spoke to author, educator, and all-round new media visionary Clay Shirky about whether Facebook's rising star would ever fall. And he said,
it's hard to guess how long Facebook will be around. I mean, everything ends at some point. But I don't think that there's any foreseeable future in which Facebook goes away or even becomes significantly smaller or less important than it currently is. Make a list of their advantages. Enormous user base, incredible economies of scale, world-class infrastructure. Advertisers are tripping over themselves to get involved. No one wants to call themselves a competitor. Now make a list of their disadvantages, right? A handful of privacy nuts are cranky. Can you think of a second thing to add to that list? I can't.
Well, 5.5 years later, we figured you could think of a few more, right?
No, absolutely. The list has gotten longer.
You know, the challenge that Facebook faces is because they're operating at a scale that no one has ever even really thought about before.
It was an unprecedented scale when we talked in 2012.
But it was at least a scale that was similar in size to nation states. Now there are not even countries as large as Facebook. 2 billion monthly unique users. If you took China and you added the entire population of America, and then you added the entire population of America again, that is Facebook. It's now operating at such a scale that ordinary people can't think through the ramifications of what could go wrong.
Aside from just scale, how did they get themselves in this position? I think they've played fast and loose with the data with absolutely no consequences.
The playing fast and loose question really comes down to legality versus ethics. Every click-through license you've never read for every piece of software you want to use has basically committed your firstborn. I mean,
right.
No one reads those documents. And this is where I think Facebook is in trouble now, is cold comfort to people who regard what Cambridge Analytica is doing as being possibly legal but definitely wrong. I still think Facebook is not going away. They will have to be regulated. They'll have to change some of their business practices. But as many people have been pointing out, just leave Facebook is not an option for many people. The idea that, oh, you can just quit and be part of your small community. You know, a friend of mine is saying, look, I have a rare disease and Facebook has been absolutely invaluable as a support group, as an information group. And the problem Facebook continues to solve is not the problem of helping people talk in groups. The problem Facebook solves is finding people to talk to in the first place.
Right.
And that service remains intact. There is a degree of American narcissism here. If the FTC were to come to some consent decree with Facebook that said, you must delete the profiles of all U.S. users, their total population would go down by just a shade over 10%. Mm-hmm. 90% of that company operates outside of the United States.
Then let's talk about outside the United States. We know that Europe has imposed certain controls on Facebook's use of data that
right.
we have declined to do.
Right.
But of course, they're going to have to be subject to at least the European regulations, and those will have an impact on many American users, or won't it?
Germany is now in the position vis-a-vis data what California does for auto regulations. When California sets minimum standards, car makers just say, look, if we're going to have to do it for California, we might as well have to do it for the whole United States. Germany is now in the position of being willing to enforce data regulations that spread over a large enough area because of the EU expansion that it will effectively rein in Facebook.
For all of us?
For all of us. You know, the miracle of Facebook is it's the 6 degrees of separation model now globally. At some point, if I start saying, oh, these regulations only touch the friends of your friends' friends, that's a bunch of people in Europe already. And so having to tighten that up will mean that the whole network becomes less fluid for advertisers and more protective of what the users expect out of that service.
You always seem to me to be the ultimate tech optimist. You know, you believe that the internet had the potential to be a liberating and democratizing force that would transform governments, the way some people feel about capitalism. Do you still feel optimistic?
I am much more narrowly optimistic, as I think anyone looking at this environment would be. Many of the things that I and many other people were optimistic about in the last decade, and people saying, no, that'll never happen, have not only happened, they've been folded into the background. We now all take Wikipedia for granted. You can't even get a fight going over Wikipedia anymore. What I did not know, and I think, you know, few of us knew, is this ability to concentrate hatred and being able to magnify it at this scale, I had underestimated. But I will say, again, that the United States is only a small part of this now. And when you see, for instance, what's going on in Zimbabwe or what's going on in South Korea, both of which are having moments of emerging out from under control by autocratic regimes, one democratically elected but autocratically minded, one genuinely autocratic, you absolutely see the ability to coordinate resistance to those regimes as being part of that story. So there's a degree to which I can be, I think, both very pessimistic about my country without thinking the story that's going on in the United States is the same as the story that's going on everywhere in the mm-hmm. world.
So what do you think? Do you think that Congress and or the FTC will try to take some action? Do you think that this is a Facebook world and it'll always be a Facebook world and Mark Zuckerberg will say he's real sorry and just continue doing what he's always done?
This moment feels different, but there is no will in a Republican-led Congress to force Facebook to create a more skeptical environment. I think Congress would tolerate an environment in which fewer things went viral, and when they went viral, they spread less quickly and less far. That, I think, is going to be the net result of this.
How do you do that?
You tone down the parts of the algorithm that look for the hottest, newest, most emotionally driving stuff. The speed with which the ice bucket challenge spread through Facebook was a result of a whole bunch of engineering choices about, oh, people seem to like these videos. We're going to prioritize them. You can dial it up or down, and I think Facebook may end up dialing it down.
But that will cost Facebook time spent online and thus money.
Right. The interesting question, and this is the one that Zuckerberg himself has opened up, is time spent online the right metric to be optimizing for any longer? Because in fact, Facebook is so far out in front that they may be able to worry more about whether or not they are slowly wearing out their existing users because they can't double their user base. They literally can't. With China locking Facebook out and much of the people that they could pick up next essentially waiting for the economic tide to get them smartphones, Facebook is at roughly the scale it will be operating at for the next several years.
So where does it go? How does it change?
So it could potentially change in the direction of user loyalty rather than simply squeezing every minute out of every day. It means taking a hit to revenue, and it's not clear that a public company would ever do that, even if it's obviously the right thing, unless a government made it clear that the alternative was going to be much worse. And that's where I think regulation comes in. Regulation is the stick that potentially lets Facebook say, if we just slow things down and we stop treating all conversation as being, you know, potentially substitutable. So when you meet somebody at a party who keeps going on and on about the Federal Reserve, either letting that person into your kitchen to yell at you and three friends or giving them a megaphone to reach a million people, that feels really weird, which is essentially what Facebook now does.
How do they prevent that?
What they have to do is to make what's called the first neighborhood, which is really literally just you and your friends, not the next ring out, be more of a defensive cordon than it currently is. Right now, they regard the first neighborhood, you and all your friends, as being, here's a list of doorways to Brooke. So if anything comes through any of these doorways, we can also get to Brooke. If instead you start thinking of the first neighborhood the way it works in the offline world, here's a list of bodyguards for Brooke. They will only forward to her things they think she's actually interested in. You end up with much less content moving through the network. You end up with much less clickbaity content moving through the network. But you may end up in a world in which you and your friends have tighter relations on Facebook, and the kind of friends of a friend's, everybody's seen this stuff, falls into the middle distance.
And that's a good thing, because it sounds like super cocooning to me.
You know, there are places where you should go out in public and be exposed to points of view and have to defend your own and whatever else. But those people should not be able to follow you into your home. Constantly demanding that people engage in a conversation they don't want to have, mm-hmm. so they become exhausted and remove themselves from the public sphere. So we need filter bubbles because we need some place to talk with people who agree with us, partly to rest, partly because some ideas are better worked out among people who see eye to eye. And we need a public sphere where we can smash our ideas against each other and see which bits fly off. Right now, you see people who have political malfeasance in mind constantly trying to take large-scale patterns of argumentation and inject it into the small scale. You see this on Reddit, the giant collection of discussion boards, when politically minded groups go on raids where they simply attack people on other boards, flooding them with people who disagree with them in order to disrupt the ability for those people to talk among themselves. Unsurprisingly, boards having to do with feminism, boards having to do with racism, et cetera, people trying to discuss these issues in need of social response will often get flooded by the alt-right. Not trying to argue with them, but simply trying to prevent them from even having the conversation. So we need small-scale cocoons and we need large-scale public spheres. And right now, they may now be in a position where they face enough regulatory threat that they would start doing things that would voluntarily give up some of the addictive qualities of Facebook in favor of some of the qualities that my friend Jillian was talking about, of I have a disease and it's interesting for me to meet other people who suffer from this rare condition. You know, that's the baby that you don't want to throw out with the bathwater. But people with rare diseases don't need virality. You don't need things to move at lightning speed across hundreds of millions of people to find other people who are similar to you that you might want to talk to.
Thank you, Clay.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Brooke.
You're still an optimist.
You know, you call me a tempered optimist, yes.
Clay Shirky is the Vice Provost of Educational Technology at NYU.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, Michael Loewinger, and Leia Fetter. We had more help from John Hanrahan, Philip Yiannopoulos, and Isaac Napel. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Greg Rippon.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Like me on Facebook. No, don't.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.